Well, I get an opportunity about once a month to volunteer at a place called Mineral Area CPRC. So this is an adult community psychiatric rehabilitation center. I'd look that up to make sure that that's exactly how that's worded. And what they do, they provide person-centered treatment, and they have a clubhouse that they get to go to throughout the course of the week, and they can engage in all kinds of things there. They can take classes. They have a community that they get to rally around. There's meals that they share together. If they want to explore things about their faith, they have ways to do that. She said that they actually stream our gatherings sometimes there. Not stream it, but they replay what we did on the weekend. Sometimes they like other things. But I get to go be in person there once a month and kind of lead in a corporate worship gathering with them. And I bring my guitar and we sing some songs. I get to proclaim some good news. We pray together. I hang around. I have great conversations with them. I listen to stories. I answer questions. It really is a great thing when I, usually the weeks that's coming up, I'm thinking, good Lord, why did I say yes to this? And then after I do that, I'm like, oh, thank God I said yes to that, you know? And last month there was, as we were hanging out after the gathering, there was a lady in her late 50s or early 60s, and she came up to me and she said, could you pray with me? I said, sure, what do you want to pray about? And she goes, well, I have a problem with lying. So, and of course, this community psychiatric rehabilitation centers, there's a lot of stuff that you hear sometimes. She said, I have a problem with lying. And she asked, could I pray that she would stop lying? I said, no, I will not pray for that. So I said, and she's looking at me like some of you guys are looking at me like, why would you not pray for that? I said, no, I'm not going to pray for that. And we talked a little bit about lying and what's going on and what's happening in her heart. Why does she even want to stop lying? What is it that, about lying that, well, she said, well, because it's bad. And then she said something else, because I think it hurts the people that I lie to. I was like, oh, man, that's good. So I said, how is trying to stop lying going? Not well. I can't stop lying. That's what she said. I'm like, well, how about we stop trying to stop lying? I'm not going to pray for that, but stop trying harder to stop lying and instead maybe practice something else. So when you lie, instead of beating yourself up, getting upset that you lied again, how about in that moment you just practice a little confession and you tell the person that you lied to that you lied to them, and then ask forgiveness of that person and then tell them the truth. Do a little truth telling in that moment. And you can see kind of like a little light bulb come on for her, like, huh? And I said, what I think is going to happen when you start doing that, when you start practicing this idea of truth-telling, when you start practicing the idea of noticing that in that moment and going ahead and leaning in to the idea that I don't need to as much stop lying as much as I need to confess and ask for forgiveness, that what I think is going to happen is you're going to start noticing that work of God in your life. And you're going to notice before you actually lie that you're getting ready to. And because you're a wanter, you desire to not lie, you're going to be faced with a choice. And I bet eventually you'll start choosing not to lie before it even comes out of your mouth. I said, we can pray for that. She goes, yeah, let's pray for that. So we did. We prayed that she would start noticing God's work in her life, that she would start asking for forgiveness, that owning up when she lied and not beating herself up when she lied, letting God meet her in her lies. Because that's where she at. The reality is, what she's telling me, I'm a liar. So rather than pretend you're not a liar, let God meet you in your lying. Let's just do that. So we prayed for that and prayed that the Spirit would work in her and that she'd be able to start choosing better not to lie eventually. Isn't that great? So good. Well, we're digging into spiritual practices these days. We're talking about those. We have our 10 practices of becoming on the wall that we've been looking at, and we're going to continue to look at this fall. And we're doing that as we continue to also in the Sermon on the Mount. We were reminded that the story matters a lot. And when we choose to live as much loved children of God, our practices then help us become the person that the story tells us we are. Man, that's good news. And the practices help work out the kinks in our lives. And so that it can prevent, the kinks prevent God's Spirit to flow freely through us. And when the kinks are opened up, His work can flow through us and help us. And then Brian last week gave a great illustration about the selfie culture. If you missed that message last week, go miss it. because taking selfies are literally killing us. He talked about how it's killing you. Some of you guys are curious now, so go out and watch that. But our selfie culture disciples us. So here's the thing. Often we want to think about discipleship as when we come into a place like this or we're spending time with God. We are being discipled all the time by everything, okay? All the time by everything. And our selfie culture disciples us every day to believe that our lives only matter if they're noticed. And our desire to matter is a really good thing. It's a good godly desire. But the problem is when we want to be noticed by others more than we want our Father to notice us in secret. Said, if we practice for reconciliation, we already have our reward. But when we practice to form Jesus-like character, the reward is both now and forever. Our motive matters because we always reap what we sow, right? Yeah. Today we're continuing in Matthew chapter 6. We're up to verse 16 to 18. And Jesus continues to hit on the same thing. He says, when you fast, post it to social media, talk about it everywhere, moan and groan about how difficult it is and how spiritual you are. It says, when you fast, don't put on a sad face like the hypocrites. They distort their faces so people will know that they're fasting. I assure you that they have their reward. When you fast, brush your hair, wash your face, please. Then you won't look like you're fasting to people, but only to your Father who is present in that secret place. Your Father who sees you in secret will reward you. Here's some good news today I want to proclaim. In a world full of noise, stimulation, and indulgence, spiritual practices help us grow in awareness of God and alignment with reality, what is real. And they free us from the enemy's hold and free us for real life. Really good news. So yet again, we see Jesus take these spiritual practices that were very important to the people in this day, and he teaches something about it. Not so much about the practice itself, but why we should practice, why we should do it, who it's for. And as you can tell by the first part of Matthew 6:16, Jesus assumes that we are practicing. He says right out of the gate, and when you fast, not if you fast, he's like, if you're serious about your spiritual journey, when you fast, because this is the thing that's really important to you, so he's saying, when you fast, don't put on a sad face like the hypocrites. They distort their faces. He's saying, I'll assure you, they have their reward in heaven. So Jesus is implying right out of the gate that we will do this, and when you do it this way. These practices were very important, and Jesus is validating them. He's saying, this is good. He's not saying, whoa, don't fast. He's saying, you guys are fasting. That's a good thing. Validating. So in this case with fasting, Jesus wasn't teaching them necessarily how to fast. He was teaching them how to practice. What does it look like when you do a spiritual practice like fasting? He was using fasting as an example. And he's saying, of course you're going to do it, but why? How? When you fast, brush your hair, wash your face. Then you won't look like you're fasting to people. So when he's saying, this is why we're saying, he's not just teaching them how to fast. That's not the point. He's not saying, man, you got to brush your hair and wash your face because that's how you become more spiritual through this process. He's using fasting as an example. He's saying, don't let it be about other people. Brian hit on this a little bit last week. Practicing isn't about others. We don't practice to look better. We practice to become better, to become more like Jesus. The point's what's happening in me. That's what he's getting back to. The point's what's happening on the inside, not what people are seeing on the outside. I'll take care of the outside if you let me also take care of the inside. He's saying, don't fast to boost your ego. It's not going to do anything to help you. In fact, it's actually going to do something to hurt you. It's actually very harmful to try to boost your ego in that. So when we have these spiritual practices and we try to fit them into like what the culture constantly says, this needs to be about other people and how you measure up to that, and you try to put your spiritual practice in those ways, it's very damaging to your life. So damaging. It's bondage is what it is. So when we start comparing ourselves to other people and we start doing things for the praise of others, for others, rather than for what's going on inside of us, we are bound up with that stuff. And it will destroy you. It will harm you. It will rob you of joy, of self-worth. It will steal the good work that God's doing in you, and God wants to do a good work in you and through you. So Jesus is reminding them, practices are great, but it's not about a reward from other people. It's not based on what others are seeing or thinking about you. So sometimes I think we can do the right things, but for the wrong reason. So like we can do the right things because this is what social pressure says to do, instead of doing them out of surrenderance to God. And you could say, well, at least I'm doing the right thing. Isn't that good? I don't know. I think it's just good for what it is. You did the right thing. Is it going to help transform your life? Absolutely not. Because we're not doing it out of response to surrender to God and his love and who he is. So don't just do the good things for the wrong reasons. Do the good things out of surrendering to God. Because in a world full of noise and stimulation and indulgence, spiritual practices help us grow in our awareness to God and alignment with reality. And they free us from the enemy's hold, and they free us for real life. Here's something else that's important to know about this spiritual practice. If there's a spiritual practice, we also have a spiritual enemy. Right? Ephesians says, Paul says, we aren't fighting against human enemies, but against rulers, authorities, forces of cosmic darkness, and spiritual powers of evil in heaven. And Jesus invites us to help defeat the enemy. So the spiritual battle isn't always visible. It's not always visible. Matter of fact, often we don't see so much of what's actually going on, what's really taking place. So when I'm talking about reality, I'm saying there's a bigger reality than just what you're seeing. There's a whole other reality that's taking place within this reality. So in order to align with reality, that's going to help us fight the spiritual battle. And a lot of times we see this in a defensive posture, spiritual warfare. I think we see spiritual warfare as defensive, and that when the enemy shows up, it's going to be some sort of big, like, demonic presence, and it's going to be something really bad, and we're going to be able to see it. And I'm not saying those things don't happen. I've had those happen in my life. But what I think we do is we overestimate and overemphasize those in our life, and we underestimate and underemphasize the everyday spiritual life that we live down here in the weeds, real life. And our spiritual enemy's not going to show up in red pajamas and a pitchfork, okay? It's not going to be that obvious. It's not how he works. Here's how I think he works a lot of times in our everyday lives. Think of just like a week or a month of your life, the real life that you live in. I was saying this to somebody this morning, busy, busy, busy. Like, I actually want to say, oh, things aren't all that busy. I got a lot of time just chilling out. It's good. That's what I really want. I'm not proud of how busy I am sometimes, but normal life sometimes is busy. The instant gratification that we lean into, the feeling of guilt and shame, the pull to compare yourself against others, this, like, we are so busy with so much stuff in our life, so much constant distraction, that I think this happens a lot of times. We're so busy that we don't even have time to slow down enough to even see if what we're doing is actually what we want to do. You know what I mean? Like, when you're just so busy, you can't even step back and go, do I even like what I'm doing right now? Do I like my life? What? 5 hours on social media today. Do I even want to be on social media for 5 hours? Like, where you just slow down and actually step back and look at your life and say, is this what I want? Now, granted, there's a lot of things in life that you're doing that you don't maybe want to do. You may not want to work, but you have bills, so then you got to work, right? There are plenty of things that we have to do that we don't love doing, that we got to be sure that what we're doing in our life is things that we're actually choosing to do, not byproducts of schedules that other people are putting on us, or wants and desires of other people. What do I want? What does God want? Does that make sense? In a world full of noise and stimulation and indulgence, spiritual practices help us grow in awareness of God and align us with reality. And they free us from the enemy's hold, and they free us for real life, that we can actually notice and see and choose and surrender to. Jesus is saying, when you do practices, because as his followers, we're going to do them, don't look for a reward in others. We don't do this for ourselves. We don't do it for others. He said, remember, but only the Father who is present in the secret place, your Father who sees you in secret will reward you. The reality is there's way more that's going on than what we can see. And God helps us meet us in that place, the unseen place, that's often as important or maybe even more important than what we can see. The primary tool that we use in our Get Real group is called a Get Real Wheel. And that's what it helps us see. It helps us see reality. Helps us see the bad news in our life. It helps us see the good news, that we get to actually choose something different, not just live life as it comes, and then we try to do spiritual things in there, like live life intentionally, spiritual lives, where we get to choose what's good. And here's the reality of this. I think this is actually pushing back the darkness. I think this is actual ongoing spiritual warfare, that it's not sitting back and waiting for something to come to us. It's about leaning into the good news that God has already freed us from something for something else, and that we're pushing back the darkness when we're allowing God to work in our lives. That's spiritual warfare. It's called offense, not defense. It says he invites us in to defeat the enemy, to push back against the darkness, and that's how we're doing it. And Jesus is using this idea of fasting, and I think it's a good idea. What he's reminding, though, is that there is more than just the physical bread that they're eating, that that's not the only thing that brings them life. He's saying fasting isn't about abstaining from something to be spiritual or to look spiritual. Fasting isn't about abstaining from something that way God thinks you're more spiritual. And now that you're fasting, and if I just do it for 10 more days and keep asking God for this, he's going to eventually give me what I'm asking for because I'm fasting. The good work that happens is when we pause from something that's normative in our life. When we pause from something that we're comfortable in or that's distracting us, we're able to refocus and be reminded that there's more going on in the physical than what we can actually see, and that we get to lean into him, surrender to him and his good news. There's a whole other reality. And Jesus is saying that's what fasting's doing. Fasting's about pressing pause on something, seeing something, becoming more aware of God and his presence. Do you remember when the Israelites finally freed from Pharaoh? They come up to the Red Sea, part the Red Sea, they cross it. It's this miraculous moment. When we read this, we're like, holy smokes. They like walked through. It was like when the aisles were all together and then we spread them back apart. I remember Terry Vance coming in and go, whoa, there's an aisle here. Like, yes, we have an aisle. It was like parting the Red Seas, and we come walking through this moment and the seas crash down. And you think in that moment, they're like, wow, look what we've been freed from. And instead, a short time later, you know what they start doing? Kind of want to go back. Let's go back. What? Go back. But the reality is so many of them had actually been born into slavery. It's what they knew. They were used to it. It's where they were comfortable. They had comforts there. They had better food there. They actually had shelter there. So even though they had left Egypt, Egypt was still very much a part of them. And they had to separate from what they were comfortable from. They had to step back to be able to see. They knew what they had been freed from. They just hadn't got a good enough vision of what they've been freed for. So what they were wanting to do is go back rather than lean in to understand the story, who they are in the story, how they fit in God's story. They were willing to trade what they might have been freed for to go right back into bondage because that's what they were comfortable with. And you know what? I think we do that over and over and over again in our own lives. In a world full of noise, stimulation, and indulgence, spiritual practices help us grow in an awareness of God and alignment with reality, which is both the reality of the tangible world that is seen and the spiritual realm that is unseen. And when we live in alignment with God in this reality, the full reality, it frees us from the enemy's hold, and it frees us for real life freedom. You hear this quote from Dallas Willard often around here. And Dallas Willard was an incredible philosopher, an author, a thinker. He helped shape so many great conversations about spiritual formation. And I love this quote from him when he was asked about dying. He said, "I think that when I die, it might be some time until I know it." Now we hear that and we're like, well, that's silly. Might be some time till I know it. What Dallas was saying is, what if it's possible to live in such awareness and alignment with God that I walk with him so closely every day and I'm aware of what he's up to in my life and I'm allowing him to work in my life, that when I move out of this reality of the tangible and I move into the continued reality of the unseen, the spiritual, everlasting life, what if it just takes me a little while to realize I crossed over? What a great thought. Now, I'll promise you this. I think I'd realize it today. I'm still growing, but I'm becoming more aware of God. I'm becoming more aware of his presence. I'm becoming more aware of this reality. And the more that I spend time with him and the more that I lean into these spiritual practices in my life, the more I feel like this is normative to me to live in the presence of God every day. Last week, Brian talked about how he pauses before he posts something or likes something or responds on social media. For him, it's like a check to say, what's my motive? Why am I doing this? Well, similar for me in this is with social media sometimes is what the enemy uses against me most of the time. It's where I see the biggest use that he wants to attack me and trap me into competition, to lure me out of gratitude for what I have and to start thinking about the things that I don't have, what I would want, some other better stuff. He uses it to discourage me, to begin to lose hope in humanity, people. And I don't always fall prey to it, but when I start to notice it, when I start to notice the temptation to believe that what's going on right now that I can see is the only reality I'm living in, that's when I begin to step back and go, whoa, that's not real. I got to step back. I got to name the lies. Why am I feeling that way? What is it about me that I feels like I need to actually, you know, compete? And what I start to notice is when I scroll through Facebook and I start thinking things like this, what an idiot. Yeah, you're all there, right? When I start doing stuff like that, and when I start getting a little judgy, you get a little judgy? When I start getting a little bit judgy, I start saying, whoa, what is going on? I have to step back, and I gotta push back against the lie that I'm better than somebody else. I'm more valuable than somebody else. And the lie that I'm actually thinking is I'm starting to place my value and my significance based on somebody else rather than the truth that it's based on who I am in Christ. But I got to step back. I've got to notice that. I've got to be able to name those things, and I got to be able to surrender to the reality of who God is and what he's freed me from. And I don't want to go back to that, but instead what he's freed me for, to live in his story, my story, and to surrender to that. And live that out in real life. Practices slow us down, align us with what is real, so that we can choose what we want more. What's the real story? What's the good news? What do I actually want? Do I want to choose that? Do I want to surrender to that? Now, we're spending a lot of time on this. And we're going really slow through the Sermon on the Mount. Like, what? Talking about fasting today? I read the Sermon on the Mount in a week. Can't we just do that, you know? Because we don't want to miss what Jesus is up to. We don't want to miss what he's calling us to. We don't want to miss this idea of life because we're so busy, we think we already got it figured out. And what Jesus is saying with these practices we've been working on, he's going, pay attention, listen up. I'm trying to teach you something about the way things are meant to be, the reality of life. And some of this stuff may sound a little foreign to you. The idea of practices, when you look at that wall, you might be like, I don't even know what they're talking about. Pay attention. You will. That's what we're talking about. But I want to encourage you to lean in with us this fall as we continue to walk through the Sermon on the Mount, as we continue to focus on these. And here's something to hear. I want you guys to hear this. You have a whole church structured to help keep focusing on equipping you to become more like Jesus. We're here to help you do that. Not to tell you how to do it, not to give you a bunch of programs, but to equip you to say, this is what it could look like. Here's some great tools to help you do that. This isn't about trying harder or doing more. It's about allowing God's Spirit to work in your life. So, Let's just reflect on that for a moment. Can we do that before we go? Let's just bow our heads, close our eyes. And this first practice we have says, I notice God at work in and around me. And I want you just to take a moment and just think back to the last time that you could kind of say, I think I noticed God at work here. And maybe name it. Where did I see God at work? It might have been on your way here this morning. It might have been in this moment. It might have been last week. If some of you are honest, you might have been saying, I don't know that I've seen God at work in months. And then as you think about that, just thank God for the way he's at work in your life. Think about areas of your life that have just got you maybe distracted. The busyness of life that keeps you going so fast that you're not even sure you have time to notice. And just step back from those for a second. Just surrender those to God. Father, thank you for what you're constantly up to. Help us this week as we walk out of here to see you at work. Nudge us. Drop something in our minds and our hearts. And maybe a practice this week for us would just be when we notice you, not to move past it, but instead to stop in what we're doing and sit with it for a second and just notice it. And just name it, the good work that you're doing. And thank you for it. God, we truly do love you. We truly do want the good work that you're doing in our life. Help us desire it more. We ask this in your name. Everybody said, amen.